This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Lighter tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by the Humboldt County Collective, Eco Groovy Deals. And we want to welcome our newest sponsor, Bear Extraction House. Welcome aboard. Thank you very much. We could not do it without you. Here's what's going on in the next hour. We are turning the traditional analysis and commentary program format on its head in this episode of the Chronicles. Instead of delivering our insights and our opinions to you, this time Larry and I are here to learn only, which means listening. In this hour, we want to learn about the role of women in the cannabis industry. And to help educate us, we have with us in the studio Tara Carver, Executive Director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and Elaine Roy of DuPont, and Jamie Dark of Dark Staffing Solutions. Thanks to each one of you for being here. We're interested in your insights and your personal stories as a way of maybe comparing the cannabis industry to other industries with regard to availability of funding, cultural attitudes, equal pay, inclusiveness, ability of women to become executives, and a whole lot more. Anything that we can get into here to learn more about it. And later, we want to review the history, sometimes unpleasant history, of women in the industry. Plus, we want to take a peek later on in the show into the future. To begin with, though, we've been hearing over the last couple of years about the expectation that the cannabis industry, because of its roots in the values of the 60s generation, or hippie values, if you want to call it that, that it would function in a much more tolerant, open-minded way, which we would think would be beneficial to women in this business. Let's start by just asking, is that happening? Is that the way you see it? Tara?
Well, first and foremost, thank you so much for having us.
Sure. Thanks for being here.
I really appreciate it, and I'm so excited to be in the studio with these two fantastic women. Not only are they comrades as we move forward, but they're just absolute idols of mine. They're shining examples of what women in cannabis can do, are doing, and have done, I think, really, in Humboldt County in the past.
Yeah.
And so, kind of to dive into that a little bit more, yes, I think that Humboldt County is unique, and the Emerald Triangle is very unique, and based on the cultural values of what brought this industry forward, and that came from the Back to the Land movement. Mm-hmm. And based on that was a lot of full involvement of family. It was homesteaders. And so I am proud to report and see that a lot of the businesses that we see moving forward right now through this crazy thing of legalization have a lot of female leadership, have a lot of women who are at the helm, and always have. And so I think that, we've got some unique businesses here in Humboldt.
At least here.
Yes.
Do you hear the same thing statewide and nationally in some of the other states?
So the interesting thing about legalization is that we've always kept our, well, prior to legalization, we kept really quiet, right? We didn't talk to people downstream in the supply chain. Now we have that opportunity, and it's really interesting to go see what the rest of the world looks like. And I do mean the world. But to narrow down into California, we see a lot of entrepreneurs and women in our urban areas. Oakland, LA, San Francisco, the women have always been part of that culture that has been bringing this industry forward. And so I'm happy to say that, yes, they're there.
So it is happening there, too.
Yeah, but that's the pre-existing or the prior to medical and, and Prop 64. What I'm seeing in the new wave of the new people coming into it, it's pretty driven in the same kind of corporate lens of I'm just going to say it, white male.
Yeah.
And specifically coming out of the tech industry, tech is playing a really, really important and unique role in cannabis. But that's pretty dominated by men.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we're seeing a
still
crossroads.
Needs to be a lot of work there.
Yeah.
And Elaine?
Yeah. I think the cannabis industry for women has a bright future. My experience personally, I love my industry, and I love being a woman in it and working within it. I come from a family of lawyers and doctors, and getting my degree in childhood education. And working in the cannabis industry has been a bright future for women. since legalization.
Why do you say that?
I think there's a lot more women business owners, and working internally in the cannabis industry, it's very open and welcoming, and I've never felt uncomfortable. The only time I've ever felt uncomfortable is like when you reach outside of the industry, and who I've chosen to work with. I've literally been asked, can I talk to your husband before? And it was so funny.
So, that's instructive, though. It tells us that there is one culture in the cannabis industry and that there still exists a whole other culture in other businesses. And when you reach out of this world, you still see that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely.
When somebody says, can I speak to your husband, do you tell them that you're the CEO of DuPont?
Yeah? I absolutely did.
You do. Good
and it
for
was
you.
Very empowering. It felt really good.
I would have some choice words.
you mean words that you can't say on radio?
Words I'm not allowed to say on radio.
Okay.
Yes.
Maybe you can let us in on that later.
I would also advise, you know, as a business owner, be picky who you work with.
Yeah, it's a choice,
I have a great opportunity here in Humboldt County to work with people that share my core values. And I think, you know, the big money and the big corporate structure is coming in to the cannabis world. But even traveling all over the state of California, going to the NCIA events and any cannabis event I can get my hands on has been a really great experience. And, you know, never flinched once when I said that I was the owner or the CEO of the company.
Good for you. Jamie, you're in an interesting situation because you deal with helping to staff some of the businesses in the cannabis industry. So what's your perspective on this opening discussion?
I do feel that this industry is an exciting space for women. And in my space, we have the opportunity to interview and screen a lot of people. And we see a lot of women come through our door. And actually, it's pretty split of the interests of people that want to work in the industry. And we're getting a lot of qualified candidates that are of women that can do C-level positions. So for me, it's exciting because we're getting validation and we're able to integrate into this professional legal industry. So it's been exciting to watch the transition of legalization and women in industry.
And what are some of the things that the women you place in this industry come back and tell you as a result of having worked in it, maybe for the first time?
So a big part of our orientation and onboarding is we do a sexual harassment prevention discussion, and we start it upon the time of hire. So we allow our employees and women in industry know that now there's an open door to talk about any uncomfortable situation that they may experience within the workplace. So for me, my experience is offering a safe and comfortable environment. So my feedback has been nothing but positive. And when we do have an uncomfortable situation, we use it as an opportunity to educate all parties, because there's been a culture that has come from the illegal market to the legal market that we are using as an opportunity to educate everybody on proper etiquette within the workplace. So again, the transition for women in the legal market has been, I think, empowering in so many levels, including that
and
situation.
In the legal market, there are legal remedies available now, right?
Yes.
If something does go wrong.
Yes, there are laws.
All right, here are some recent statistics, and this gets to what you were talking about earlier, Tara, so you can comment on this. From Green Entrepreneur, citing Marijuana Business Daily, the number of female executives in cannabis stands at 27%. That's higher than the 23% average number of executive positions held by women across all industries nationwide. That's good, but the number of female marijuana executives made up 36% of the industry in 2015. So, since legalization in places like California, which is a large state, so it would impact the statistics, right? Opportunities for women are disappearing in some places. One article actually pointed to Oregon specifically. As for cause, some accuse the investment and financial world. I don't think there's any doubt that as traditional capital starts to come into this space, starts to overwhelm the space, we are seeing women either pushed out or unable to get funding. That's according to Lisa Harris, writing in Green Entrepreneur. Continuing, she writes, men seem to control funding overall, and they would prefer to fund other men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think in general, the cannabis industry for smaller and mid-sized businesses, which really are what we have here in Humboldt County for the most part, vast majority of, have a trouble accessing capital. We don't have access to banking, and right. thus the avenues that we can get capital really do come attached to those more, traditional venues of capital, but even more so, more of a risky mm-hmm. kind of bucket to pull from.
Yeah, right.
And that risk factor in the financial sector does typically, from my lens at least, come from definitely male-dominated. I wouldn't disagree that they are funding other groups that have a lot of men in leadership. I can't pinpoint whether or not here in Humboldt County that's because they're men or if that's because of the size of their companies. The investment I'm seeing come in here is coming to two larger businesses here in Humboldt, and they just happen to be men. But I think that if there were more allies in the financial world that wanted to support smaller, mid-sized businesses, then they would directly run into our female leadership here. And so it would be interesting to see whether or not they decided to mm-hmm. go ahead and fund or not. So I can't really determine whether it's a male or female issue.
Do you think that federal legalization would have any impact one way or the other? And I don't know which way on that.
I mean, federal legalization is just going to have such a whomping impact on everything. When it comes down to capital being able, or our businesses being able to access capital who are being led by women, I would like to hope and think that that will be the same as men. But again, I can't really say. I will say this, though, because we do have literally over 1,000 small businesses in Humboldt County, cannabis businesses, a lot of them, and I don't know the numbers, are run by women. And so when in that moment does come, we should really, really, really reflect and look on it and study it. Because if we do see financial capital going to the majority of those small and mid-sized businesses run by men, we know we have a major problem on our hands.
Right.
And believe me when I say this, that the other side, the women-run businesses, we will make it really loud.
Mm-hmm. And Elaine, do you have...
Yes, I will be loud.
If that happens, yes.
Raise your voice. Huh?
You know, I don't have much experience with going out there and getting investments, but it's definitely something my company has been talking about. And I've just been trying to do a lot of research about how to talk to investors. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping, you know, that the investor would look at the business and look at the paper and not necessarily who's running it.
You would hope, right?
We would hope, yeah. So I look forward to that learning experience as a business owner, and I just...
Jamie?
I'm in the same position. I've never actually had to seek it, but I would imagine that I would have the same opportunity if things on paper added up. That's my experience, because money and numbers, I want to believe that that's what they would look at, just like you said. So,
Here's a question that comes up for women in just about any industry. It certainly would apply to this one as well. Do you sense that you have to work harder and be more innovative than men in order to get the professional respect that you deserve? Do you have any? You do.
Yes.
How so?
It's just the way it is.
Any specific instances that come to mind, or is that just kind of the overall attitude that you sense out there?
It just is. It's you walk into a room and you are the only woman, and you know that, and they know that, and you proceed as if there wasn't anything different, but there is just that the second you get in there.
Yeah. Do you hear from any of the language that they do or don't take you seriously? Does that ever happen?
I feel like we have to try harder, speak strong. Like, there has to be a level of intelligence to the conversation for them to respect you. So I think a lot of it is, if you're a strong personality, mm-hmm. like these ladies, it's easy to walk in a room and full of men and integrate. But it would be very easy to also... fall victim, like mm-hmm. feel vulnerable in that situation. So I think this industry, I walk into a lot of boardrooms, and most of them are still men. And I will be the first to tell you that a lot of my meetings are women, Andaline. And also, I mean, I've met with HCGA, there are women. But if I do walk into a room full, like if I get past the initial contact, it's usually a gentleman that I have to sit down with, which is great because it's, again, I... I can sit down and talk my business very well. And it's empowering, again, to have that opportunity to sit amongst men and have those conversations and feel like there isn't a one-sided conversation going on. So I just feel that it takes a strong person or woman in the situation to integrate yourself into the business world in general, cannabis or in general.
Right.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with Jamie. I had an experience and, you know, I walk in, I dress to the nines. I have my blazer on. I have my, and nobody dresses like that in Humboldt County.
Right, right,
it's
right.
Like, I want people to take me seriously. And not only am I a woman in business, I'm a woman in cannabis. And I also think that that has been something that has brought men and women together in the industry is, you know, we're fighting to normalize cannabis. And so that's something that I believe that as business owners that men and women can see eye to eye on in our industry. But I did run into an instance where I have my briefcase. I'm like, and this was, you know, 2.5 years ago. And the professional that I was working with or approaching to ask my questions was like, oh, you know, you with your flower crowns out on your farm dancing around. And I was like, excuse me? So I took my paperwork out and I spread it out. And, you know, I had prepared for the meeting. I was ready. And, you know, I earned his respect that day. And so 2.5 years later, when I go in there, he's eager and willing to talk to me and wanted to learn from me, but I did have to earn his respect for some reason.
So it took him seeing the spreadsheets that you had worked on mm-hmm. to convince him that you weren't just out dancing in the fields.
Mm-hmm. Andalene, I got a question. Did he earn your respect that day?
He earned my did he earn my respect that day? No, it was very difficult working with him. I'd walk in and just cross my fingers that I wouldn't.
Have you worked with him subsequently?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. And did it go okay, or you still are fighting the same fight?
I earned his respect that day, and he lost mine.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. Is that the kind of thing you hear, Tara, from some of the folks in your organization?
Yeah,
I guess what I'm asking is the good old boy network still alive and well in this particular industry the way it does seem to be still alive and well in other businesses?
You know, I that term good old boy network, I love it because it definitely like puts out the cowboy, right? What I see with our cannabis industry is the cowboy has turned into the tech guy and is kind of the bro.
Ah.
And so I see less of the traditional model of good old boy, but I see that same kind of what a good old boy would be in a different form now.
So would it be correct to say that gender discrimination in this business is more subtle than overt?
Actually, I'm going to go back to the good old boy thing.
Well,
can I jump in?
Yeah,
okay.
Please.
I have to say, here in Humboldt County, the actual good old boy network in Humboldt County has been very inviting. For me, at least, I have spent a lot of time in the good old boy network and found them to listen, ask questions, and be attentive. So whatever's going on in the good old boy network here is vastly, vastly different than the tech network that I'm seeing in San Francisco.
Right. Well, at least there's that.
There is. It's strange, but it's true.
Go ahead.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
We're a tight-knit community up here.
But I feel like in society as a whole, the woman's role has kind of always been the homemaker. And I feel like in cannabis, too, even on the, you know, illegal days, there wasn't a lot of credit given to the woman that was at home tending to the garden or the trim scene or doing a lot of the production or, I mean, even the farming. I mean, there's a lot of farming going on. And like Andalene said, they've been behind the scenes. But in today's society, even now, it's traditional that the woman has the children, stays home, takes the maternity leave. And we're starting to see that change because there's people such as myself or Andalene that are in a powerful position that we wouldn't necessarily be able to take maternity leave right now. And that's a whole nother issue, too, with us being in these positions. There's not a lot of time. It's kind of a decision that you make between your career and your family at some points in what you're doing. Or I speak on behalf of my family, your roles shift a little bit to where maybe the dad's helping out a little bit more with the child care while the kids demand the attention. And that's a shift that we're seeing, too, is a lot of the men who were cultivating or in the industry, as their farms are not going down a legal path, we're starting to see them try to use their skill sets in other ways. So we get a lot of them as applicants, and we're trying to use those skill sets and find jobs for them in the legal market. what we are seeing is some of the women that have always maintained a professional or a job during the cultivation or illegal days start to use that skill set and blossom within either their company or a company that's up and coming, and help them with their startup and be a tremendous support to those companies. Mm-hmm. So it's validating everything they were doing behind the scenes or alongside their illegal participation, or however you want to word that. But and so we're starting to see the roles change a little bit within our sector.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I became the CEO of my company. And, you know, right here, right now, while I do this interview, my husband's at home with the kids. And, you know, I'm pulling 40 hours a week doing all the paperwork. That's not his skill set. His skill set is he's the master cultivator.
Right.
And so, you know, this legalization movement has been really empowering for me and other women that are near me with partners who are supportive. And, you know, the women are the ones that are bringing up these businesses that might have gotten lost in the backwoods.
So do you think the cannabis industry then is an industry, you know, and this would be a good thing, that is more committed to things like parental leave, some of those issues that seem to be like pulling teeth in some other businesses for years and years and years? Do you think it's an easier sell in the cannabis industry?
Yeah, I would separate the cannabis industry from the Emerald Triangle's cannabis industry. Prohibition has kept a lot of different people in business, and those people represented families, and they are families. And so by nature, the how the business is structured and function supports that. Yeah. For sure. Yep. Now, the greater cannabis industry, as we see legalization spread across the nation, yeah, and what the industry looks like at some point, I don't know.
So do you think that local cultural attitudes have an impact on even the cannabis industry, depending upon where you might be talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Even in California?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we're still kind of a subculture.
We are, and even to our partners downstream, the dispensaries, you know, dispensaries were typically family-owned and operated as well, and so the heritage or traditional dispensaries, they have that same values. They're small businesses at the end of the day. We're farmers, we're shop owners, and so, you know, those are unique to, those are American yeah. values.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said before, as an owner of a company, be picky of the companies you work with. You know, if you're giving your product to another company, they're making money off that.
Right.
So make sure your core values are
also held by them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. We're just getting started. After a quick break, we're going to focus on what women have had to endure and overcome with a look at the not-too-distant past in the cannabis business, and try to get a sense about whether some recent progress is actually heading in the right direction. And we'll take a look at what's next. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. If you're just joining us, our guests here in the studio are Tara Carver, Executive Director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and Elaine Roy of DuPoint, and Jamie Dark of Dark Staffing Solutions. In the first part of our discussion, we talked a little bit about the current experience of women in the legal cannabis industry, but let's remind ourselves of the road that got us here. It was not always smooth. In fact, those who've been in this area for any length of time will remember some horror stories of the treatment of women who were working in the hills and so on. So first of all, to all of you, can you first recount for us what it was like to be a woman in this business prior to legalization?
I'll jump into that. What was it like to be a woman? It was exciting at times, mm-hmm. Empowering at times, mm-hmm. Scary at times.
Risky at times.
And yeah. Risky at times. So it kind of depended on the day and the job, honestly. There was a lot of freedom that came with the traditional or unregulated, illicit or illegal, whatever you want to call it mm-hmm. these days, market. But it was a risk and reward play. And there was a lot of risk, and especially for women, especially out in the hills.
Yeah.
Our rural communities don't have cell service, and you didn't quite know where you were at times. And I think ultimately what it comes down to is this wasn't a thing. Well, it was densely populated here with this industry, but prohibition was the key problem. It yep. wasn't necessarily this industry. It definitely wasn't this plant. It was that there wasn't any regulation or rules or yeah. laws or
remedies.
Yeah. And that was one of the biggest things, is that there's horrific things that happened to a lot of people out in the hills, but you just couldn't talk about it. You couldn't report it.
Right. I know. Some of the stories about the trimmigrants and so on.
Oh, yeah. And even within our own community, domestic violence. I know a handful of situations where we would come together as women and be like, do you want us to call the sheriff? And, you know, no. I need to feed my kids next year. And if the sheriff comes, I lose my crop this year. And these women had two, you know, black eyes. Not okay. Totally
no.
not okay.
No.
One of the, and those experiences pushed, I think, us, and I definitely know Andalene, and met Jamie later, like, pushed us to help advocate for regulation, because that wasn't okay. But we knew it wasn't the plant. We knew it wasn't the industry as a whole, and we knew it was based out of prohibition.
It was the situation.
And it was a situation and the inability to actually call anybody. So I think, yeah, we shouldn't discredit what happened in the past. We should absolutely talk about it, and we should talk about it loud, because we can never go back.
Yeah, you don't want to forget that.
No, absolutely.
Because you don't want it to happen again.
No.
Yeah, I mean, this is so my element. My husband and I were both born into the industry and on farms, so where we were located, it was family all around. So I never really experienced those bad things, but I definitely heard about them, and I advocated for a lot of my friends. I also think, you know, like Jamie over here, she provides employees for us, and, you know, we were always one of the safe places to go, and I really was proud of that. I took a lot of pride in providing a safe place, and we would have, you know, what you called trimmigrants show up, and they would just be like, oh, we feel so safe here. It was like the key word, we feel so safe here. And I was kind of like, what? Really? So that is another reason why I pushed for legalization. Also, I wanted my family to be safe. We're homesteaders. It's a lifestyle. I love my life, and I love my lifestyle, and we love living off the land and working with the land, and you know, wanting to encourage people to provide a safe work environment, a safe place for people, and to be safe within the industry that I love.
Jamie, you said earlier that when you have people who you may place at one of these businesses, you do go through a lot of things that they need to know.
We do.
And
we do.
Go ahead.
Harassment is one of them. Harassment in general, but we do focus on sexual harassment. There was a new law passed this year that by 2020, farm labor contractors have to do 1 hour of sexual harassment for all of their employees. So we have already implemented that this year. So every month we do an active class in-house where we pull our staff in and we do 1 hour on how to treat people with respect within the workplace. And we have somebody come in, George Walker, and he comes in and gives this presentation. It's amazing. And we talk about two things, which is intent and impact, which a lot of people should consider in daily life, too, not just within the workplace. But
what do you mean by intent and impact?
The intent of the conversation or the intent of the gesture that's happening and the impact of how people feel. And Tara brings up what has happened to people in the hills. And we do get a lot of people that are coming over from prior to legalization that love what we do, because we do provide the safe working place, and we provide payment promptly and like in a bank account and in check form. So that's exciting, because they're not, you know, waiting for their payment either, taken advantage
that they
of
may in that or may not get.
Exactly, which women have notoriously been taken advantage of. I found myself in a very unique position when I first started dark staffing in 2017 in this little one person office and four walls, and it's amazing what people disclose in four walls when it's just you and them, and they let their guard down and feel comfortable. And I will tell you that I was horrified with some of the things that I was told, some of the experiences, and what that did for me in 2017. The first time I ever heard a story like that was in September, and it fueled my fire, and it drove my passion to create a safe working environment and empower women within our industry.
This had a lot to do with you starting Dark Staffing Solutions?
No, Dark Staffing Solutions started, I was doing staffing for mainstream businesses outside of cannabis, and I've always had a relationship with cannabis and knew that one day when legalization happened, I wanted to
could fold that in.
Yes.
Yeah.
And provide the service. My relationship was with the indoor culture. So it was local in town, so I don't have a lot of horror stories, because it was such a tight group of people that were participating that and that was the frustration, just that, the secrecy of that situation and finding new workers. So if you had employees and they decided that they were not going to provide their services anymore, it wasn't as easy as going and putting out an ad in the paper that you were looking for an employee. It had to be the network. So, and women notoriously found themselves in trim positions within the industry just because, for whatever reason, they're seen as more trustworthy. And we still hear that to this day. Sometimes we find ourselves, again, in a situation to educate men who will call and say, all right, I need five ladies to come in and do de-leafing. And we're like, well, okay, so what you mean by that is, and he's like, well, I just need small people to get in. And I'm like, okay, well, you need people that can work with plants in small places. Like, there's ways to say that, you
close
know.
Close work.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And so, again, it's an education. It's just a continual education opportunity. So that's what we're doing. And, yeah, and like, reverting, going back to that story in September when I first heard that, It fueled what I was doing to provide these safe working environments. So we do site visits, and we go out and check out farms.
You do?
We do. I'm fortunate enough that Andaline, we have somebody that works for us who's visited the farm on many occasions. So we got the green light very quickly when she called and requested employees. And again, it is empowering to know somebody who has the same views and beliefs and sending employees out there 2 hours away from civilization.
Tara, countywide, I don't even know if there are statistics on this, but is it your sense that in the legal market, some of the issues that we're hearing here are better because of legalization?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, across the board, whether it's, I mean, just back to the fear and secrecy that this community has held tight. I mean, that just expresses itself in our children, expresses ourselves in our community, being able to just relieve ourselves of the burden of having and hosting and housing a secret. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing significant change across the board. And legalize this, we need to study this closely in the future and look back. We don't have substantial data right now. That's actually one of the things we're lacking, is understanding where we are through the number lens. But on the cultural lens, our hills are quieter. Our communities are feeling safer. I am seeing a significant decrease in our rural schools, our rural fire departments, our rural community centers with funding. So that is a huge, you know, the hills are getting quieter, so the money's drying up some of those activities. So it's, you know, we're going through an immense amount of change and transition, but I look forward to looking back 20 years from now and being like, gosh, did we do this the right way or did we mess it up? I'm sure there's somewhere in the middle. But it's changing for sure.
I like the phrase, the hills are quieter.
Yes,
with regard to this topic, that's certainly what we want to hear.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I bring it up is because, you know, the workplace is an issue for women, no matter what the business is, especially these days. I mean, you can't read a newspaper or turn on TV or look at your phone and not hear something about workplace violence or mistreatment of women or whatever it is. So this industry, even though the value set at the foundation may be a little better, it's something that the industry certainly has to be aware of. And it sounds like, from what you're saying, that it is.
Yeah, I think we are. We've seen a change.
Okay.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with one of my friends who have done the transition, and one of the topics was, you know, having that conversation of, well, who has interest in the business? You know, is it a female that's been working on the business for the past 8 years? There's value there. And, you know, going down this legalization path has brought forward, you know, I'm not just so-and-so's girl. I'm now the CEO of my company. And it created a space for women to have those conversations and, you know, assess their value in the company and wherever they're working. Also, you know, the story of the girlfriend that worked for 7 years and then left with nothing. Mm-hmm. So legalization has created a safe space there to have those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, do you sense that I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway, that there's still so much education to do with men who are running some of the companies you deal with, that it's a constant still?
It is. And I think it is for everybody. So just everybody in general, even just appropriate workplace conversations, you know, things that you look at on your phone, comedy you listen to on the, you know, radio that everybody is listening to. You have to now kind of be politically correct about it, you know, and watch what is being said and what you're hearing.
Like the guy calling and saying, I need some ladies.
Yes.
Or like Andalane said, referring to somebody as a girl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's still there.
It is still there. And I think that will forever be there. I just think that's it's a culture thing.
Okay. It's actually education that I needed to run my company. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. The way
I think that, you know, previous to this, you're
the CEO.
She's cracking up. I love it. I think previous to legalization, like, there was a lot of skill sets that we never had access to learn. We also didn't have access to permits. And so we can, like, pivot to the environmental piece of the puzzle here. You didn't call Department of Fish and Wildlife and have them out to the farm to see if that drainage was impacting that water.
I'm doing this right.
Yeah, no, you didn't do that.
And you didn't call anybody to ask if you can cut down a tree or two.
Nothing.
None of that was happening.
And so we, as a community, are having to learn a huge amount, and I'm really proud of our community for learning it, and quickly, too. Not only are we learning HR, but we're learning about pulling permits, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and on and on and on. And it's been a learning curve for sure. But in the past, we only had access to professionals that were our attorneys, our law. So that was it. Like, if you got in trouble, okay, that was your interaction with a professional. So we've had to learn a whole lot of professional skill sets real quick.
We are nowhere near done with this discussion. On the way, we'll take a peek into the future and see whether we can tell just by looking if the cannabis industry will be a level playing field for women or not as the legal industry matures. We'll be back in a moment.
I love that you...
You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Welcome back. We are taking the pulse of the cannabis industry with regard to its inclusiveness or not of women. That follows, of course, the legalization of commercial cannabis in California a little more than a year and a half ago. Our guests here in the studio are Tara Carver, Executive Director of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, Andalane Roy of DuPoint, and Jamie Dark of Dark Staffing Solutions. So this is the part of the show where you cannot be wrong. The reason for that is that we're going to be trying to predict the future, trying anyway. First, just to get started on this, what do you think the odds are that we'll be able to hold on to what a lot of us think of as Humboldt County cultural values or the 60s values that have been present over the last however many decades, while at the same time the legal cannabis industry is likely to be federally legalized, which could create a global market, which could send this industry into all different kinds of cultural situations in this country and around the world? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Sure.
Yeah? Go ahead.
Humboldt's already global.
Ooh,
our culture
profound.
Is already out there.
There you go. Actually, I'll just dovetail right off that. That's exactly what I was going to say, Andalane, is that we have a pretty strong brand, reputation, story already embedded across the globe. A lot of that has come actually from labor. We've had for decades people travel from all over the world and land on our farms and work and then go back to their respected countries and seed the story. And so we've done that for decades. Now,
go ahead. I was going to ask, and you're saying that once they've spent time here, they take those values back with them?
You never forget Humboldt once you come to Humboldt.
And they take?
Yeah.
They last?
I think they take a story with them, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah.
It's their story.
It's a story, and it's unique to this Emerald Triangle region because nobody can ever reproduce or duplicate the past. And we've got 60 years worth of the war on drugs. We've got 60 years worth of, you know, rebel farmers in the hills. Again, come with a lot of bad stories, but nonetheless, the story is there, and it can't ever be retold.
But now, you see why I'm asking, because if it becomes global, I mean, we may think we still have work to do here in this country, and we do, but think about how women are treated in some other parts of the world in some countries, and what happens when businesses here are trying to do business with people in those places, and maybe they don't feel real comfortable with the values over there.
I think that it's going to come down to what Andalane said earlier, like making sure that we're working with businesses that have like-minded values. Values are a big deal in Humboldt. They always
know who you're dealing with.
Know who you're dealing with. Yeah. Know who you're working with. And I think the more that we support these businesses, these entrepreneurs right now, because that's really what what we're seeing is a transition from an old world to a new world, and the entrepreneurial spirit is driving are these local businesses, and they're based in values that were founded through the back to the landers. Reinvest into your community. Your radio ads just now were just that.
Right.
And Bear Extract coming out and supporting the Mateel, like that's a profound story. And this show. That's a profound story.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, we work here at Humboldt County Growers Alliance to really have the triple bottom line approach, people, planet, and prosperity. And we do a lot of workshops to be able to encourage our members to build their business model based on that model. And I think that, you know, looking through the crystal ball and the future where there's no wrong answer, we will find those partnerships downstream, because the world is in crisis right now on a host of different levels, including climate change and and equity and whatnot. And I think we will find like-minded partnerships.
Jamie, your thoughts on that?
Excuse me. I just looked at my phone and then thought about the million things that the work is taking me away from. So I think that Humboldt County's values, as far as like taking it with them and the cultural aspect that we are offering, I think, I mean, even for me in Indiana, I grew up in Indiana. I moved out here in 2005, and I definitely knew and wanted to be part of the Humboldt culture, just from what we heard. And so what I think they're taking back is, if they have a wonderful experience, which most of them do when they come here in the hills from their respective countries, as she said, they're taking back a positive story on how equality can exist in unregulated environments.
In unregulated environments, yeah.
And in regulated, of course, of course. But, you know, but if we're talking about the culture prior.
Yeah, we didn't have laws, so we self-governed in a lot of regards. And you're right, Jamie. Like, that's that, again, that story can never be duplicated or replicated. There was a lot of good that came out of Prohibition, too. As much bad, there was good.
Yeah, right. You need to keep the good and jettison the bad. And
yeah, I mean, rural Humboldt County was built on cannabis.
Yeah.
Schools, hospice, community centers, fire departments. That's a...
Yeah.
Community.
A community.
Yeah. And like she said, the hills are quiet now because community is, it's changing.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Our community has, you know, done the impossible many times. I think the Van Arken Restoration Project is a perfect example of that. They were told they would never do that, and they're doing it because, you know, community members are supporting it. I do think we have a profound story, and I think about the future a lot, especially with my small business and how I'm going to survive against, you know, California, corporate, the United States, and the world. How am I going to survive? I need to tell and maintain my profound story, and I also need to work with others in my community to ensure that profound story. So as I'm doing small branding, I don't package my product, but I'm hoping that all the companies I work with are going to co-brand with me, and we will tell our story together. And, you know, like, I was born here, I started my business here, I'm working with this business owner who also was born here, and maintaining that story together to tell to the world our Humboldt story, our Humboldt community.
Well, that segues into the next question I was going to ask, and that is, it's just that, actually. Do you think that we can create, or is it already created and strong enough, the local, let's call it regional, culture that's here? Will it survive intact no matter what happens to the industry as far-flung, like globally, as it gets? Will things remain? Because we hear that a lot on this show. We need to maintain the Humboldt values and culture.
We're not going to be reinventing the wheel. We see this in other industries, Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee, Vermont maple syrup, champagne. I mean, this is a story that's been told in many different areas, and it really is rooted into origin. That's that key word. And what is the story behind that origin of that product? And so I'm proud of Humboldt County, the supervisors, moving forward with Project Trellis, which is going to reinvest part of the Measure S money, which is the tax from our cannabis farmers, back into marketing efforts to do just that and promote the origin story. And we'll see how that comes out. But I mean, this is ours to lose. We are the biggest impediment. It's not the corporate monster that's coming. I think it's our own community not believing in itself enough, finding fatigue and settling. I think that what we have is something that's extraordinary, and we just got to keep going.
Well, I think you're right. I think it is up to us. But what we hear often is the concern that if this does become a national and then global business, legal business, the fear is that some big company or companies will move in here and they mm-hmm. will bring people from other areas who are interested only in the business side of cannabis and not in the cultural values.
It's been done.
Origin of it.
Hurwitz 2.0. Like, we've already experienced this with timber. Our community is acutely aware of what consolidation and one business can do and right. wreak havoc on our community. And I you know, Andalane and I, Jamie, welcome to the team on this one, but we grew up through that era. We watched that. We went to the protests. We were intimately part of that experience, and I don't think that that experience has left us, and it definitely hasn't left this community. And so I think we're aware of that, and I don't see anybody chipping in or selling out right now on
that
front.
Well, that is a good analogy, because the community did stand up.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And it was unified.
Big time.
For years.
Yep.
And it took years.
Yep.
And it worked. Go ahead.
We've been unified, and I think we'll stay unified. You know, in the last 3 years, I've seen companies merging together that want to tell that profound story and those core values. And, you know, there's companies that are coming from the outside and trying to take that and use it for their own. But I think it's happening. Mm-hmm. I do.
I think, too, like, it's not going to be just us as Humboldt County Strong. You know, we there's skill sets that we really need to bring up here. I'm seeing that definitely. Jamie's like, I can see her being like, yes.
Professional. Do I want to weigh in on this? Yes, we need people. We do need professionals in our area. We do.
Time.
There's a lack of professionals, because what's happening is we're seeing all the, and excuse me for cutting you off.
No, please go big.
There's a lot of startups, and with the startups, with these companies that are starting up, you need a team. You need a professional team, and sometimes you need people with skill sets outside of running a home business. That
what are the biggest needs in this area as you see it from a staffing standpoint right now?
Financial people.
Really?
Yes.
Accountants.
Yes.
Bookkeepers.
Yes. Accountants, bookkeepers. We also need executives. I mean, there need executive assistants. I mean, there is a huge need for people to have mini-me's or right-hand people that can help them run their business and grow that business and eventually hopefully become the CEO of the company. We need that, and we need people to believe in our economy here and our business and what's happening. And we, as a staffing company, get to work with a lot of these new businesses because they are looking for people. And we experience the challenge of getting people, and the challenge, too, of getting professionals to jump ships and come over into what they consider a federally legal job. Half of them still, you have to convince them to come over because
there's a mental
they think their
there.
Money is going to be taken out of the bank and their funds are going to be seized and their houses, and it's actually a real fear still, and we hear it. Like, I don't know if I can take this job.
Yeah, well, because why of not? Stereotypes.
And exactly. It's, you know, just because it's accepted here doesn't mean it's accepted everywhere. So it's a fear that we're trying to help.
My business is definitely experiencing that. We're having a hard time finding employees where we need them. And also, you know, I got in the game early, so I have accountants, lawyers, and a tax provider, and they're all women, by the way, and like the smartest women I know, and it has been so empowering working with them. It's just been the best. I love my team so much, but they are totally overbooked. They can't take any more clients. And, you know, I have my neighbors like, hey, I really need help with this, and they can't find.
Well, that speaks to the
which
need.
Sets us up for a predatory market.
Yes.
So then
which means what? Explain
which
it.
Means, you know, people coming in and taking advantage of entrepreneurs who really need help, and you know, they're not having the best advice or will you help me with this?
I mean, just because somebody calls himself a consultant, too, that's a word that's thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
And even for us, because we are a trusted ancillary business now within the industry, so we do get people that seek consulting and like, oh, who should I call for this or who should I call for that? And even myself, I've been disappointed with some of the people that I think are, you know, professionals and would hold themselves to a higher standard. I've seen them like let some people down that they've taken on as clients because they've misrepresented their skill set.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And that's a bummer. And that's, like you said, it does leave them vulnerable to that. And I guess we should all just encourage our kids to become accountants and CPAs and
totally
lawyers.
Get that,
and
get that
we
CPA.
Need physicians in our area too. Come
yeah,
on, ladies, come on.
We do.
We do.
Okay, I want to ask this question while we still have a couple of minutes left. Let's say that after federal legalization, and we keep hearing that at some point that's inevitable. Let's say that it is. After federal legalization, the powers that be in Washington decide that we need a cannabis czar, a cabinet level position, for example, and that you, Tara, are tapped to be the cannabis czar. So, Madam Czar, what would you want to do? Yes, yes.
You can see my face.
Applause in the congressional well here.
She looks
what would be the first 100 days? And you know, that's with what we've been talking about tonight, whether it's women in the workplace or the need for staffing, things like that, regulation, interstate commerce, the whole thing.
What's my agenda for the first 100 days?
Yeah.
First off, we're throwing a party.
Yes.
Woo! Yeah.
Party more applause from the gallery.
And then standing up social equity, ensuring that equity is strong and does what it's supposed to do. Environmental law, huge. Making sure that this plant it grows differently. Agriculture in America needs a massive change. Through the lens of interstate trade and commerce, gates open, game on, let's go.
Game on. Humboldt's ready.
Humboldt's ready. And then ensuring that, this would I'd be putting on my Humboldt hat, ensuring that our intellectual property, our county's name, appellations of origin, that law goes federal and is embedded.
Yeah.
For sure. So I guess those would be, what was that for? Party, environmental law, social
first.
Equity,
yeah, right.
And IP. Yeah.
Yeah. The party came before social
equity. And also prison reform. Sorry, gotta have it. In fact, probably up at the top. We have incarcerated black and brown people over this plant, and that is a injustice that cannot be ignored. And we need to make sure that we move forward, not only sponging and releasing them from jail, but then making sure they're the ones with the licenses, which dovetails into equity.
Right. Yeah. Some states are trying to work on that, but it's complicated. It's not easy.
It's not easy. I think that this industry is unique in the sense that people are not going to stop smoking weed. That's a for sure. And so let's use this to further some agendas that we can't get done in other industries.
Yeah. Madam Czar, either one, do you want to take that on? I guess what I'm asking, is it possible for somebody who is in a big position nationally to try to overlay some of the values and things that we've been talking about that we have learned over the last 50 to 60 years onto a national industry?
I love my lifestyle. I'd never take that job, so I'd vote for Tara.
And I'll plan the party.
Jamie's going to plan the party. Okay. You have Anna Lane's vote. Okay. So I guess it's up to you. No pressure. But I think it's possible.
I think it has to happen. I don't think this actually moves without it. Equity specifically.
I totally agree.
We saw it in New York. They weren't able to move their agenda forward because equity wasn't part of that puzzle. And so I'm really proud of that. Seeing that done over there in that state. And that's the key piece.
See if you agree with this.
Sure.
I actually see as difficult as the state legalization transition was, there's going to be another transition federally for sure. But it may be that's where our advantage comes in that we have learned so much over the last 50 years that maybe Humboldt County does provide some of the ideas and the modeling that other counties around the country, other states around the country, because look, California used Humboldt County as a model for not just 64, but propositions before that, for sure.
For sure.
So this may be actually, as much as the transition would be difficult, we may actually have an advantage to be able to contribute some of the ideas.
Oh, for sure. We're Humboldt County. We've been at the forefront of this, good and bad too. You know, being the first is never easy. But I have to say, across the state, just in general, California is a major player. We're a major player in all things. Cannabis is no different. HCGA, we're working really closely with the United Cannabis Business Association. So those are retailers down in LA, and we're working with folks in Sacramento, San Francisco, and whatnot. And California, we do have some unique policies here that that do need to transfer across. We're up to the challenge. We're ready.
Yeah. All right, Larry, you and I were supposed to learn something tonight. Did you learn anything?
I learned many, many things. Yes, I did. One thing that I'm learning right now is that we're really tight on time. So I'm just going to say I learned you and I, Chuck, as show producers, how lucky we are to have such talented and articulate and brilliant people willing to give their very precious time to come down here and be on the panel. So thank you, folks.
Thank you for having us.
I think what you're saying is there's so much to learn. We could have gone 2 hours on this easily. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. Thanks again to our kind sponsors, the Humboldt County Collective, Eco Groovy Deals, and Bear Extraction House. We'll be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month. So that means we'll see you next time, September the 18th at 6 o'clock.